I was nice. Protector Richard Hoagland. And when I asked him, I said, he said, caller, give me one reason, one motive for NASA to fake the moonwalk. I said, to divert funds to finance the MK Ultra program. He didn't know where I got that. He went silent just to, you know, not disturb any other, turn over any other rocks. So he went silent. It was stunning to the host. I knew wherever I spoke about this MK Ultra and that NASA is the cover for it. No, we haven't been to the moon, and I don't think there's another technology. I think it's rubbish from these people, and they have technology, yes. But, and like that caller said, once you understand that up is down and down is up and that the earth is what the Bible says it was, your perspective, again, I'm not a flat earther at this point, but I sure am thinking it over, like Jack Benny once said, and I'll tell you what.
Let me throw this at you. But he also brought up the concept of the firmament, which is over the earth. Now, see, that's another one with space travel. If there is a firmament, then you're not getting up there. You know what I'm saying? You're not getting past a certain point because you're gonna hit the firmament. And so he brought up another concept, which I wasn't talking about. You got geocentricity, the shape of the earth. You got the moon landing. But if there's a firmament up there, you're only getting so far and you're going to hit it. And I've watched rockets where people are claiming that they've hit the firmament with rockets and so forth. And look, it's hard to look at all this and really to try to take it in as a layman like myself, as a non-expert. But, you know, the concept of the firmament is a whole nother one that you really got to digest and to think about. And that one's a whole nother thing that you got to, you know, take a serious look at. And then space travel, if there's a firmament, well, it doesn't look like it's going to happen if there's really a firmament there. But go ahead.
Well, if you saw the old Gemini and the Apollo, notice there was a curvature. I noticed that. Rockets existed. I mean, it wasn't a fake that way. People were actually at Cape Canaveral, regular folks, Robert, watching the takeoff. So the technology's there. It's just how far we could get into the Van Allen radiation belt, which absolutely precluded any possibility of a man going up there at that time. And notice how James Lovell, he punched Stibble, who was trying to expose him, and they looked the other way on that. We have the Ohio, John Glenn from Ohio. They get into politics. Right out here in Utah, Jake Garn, Congressman Garn. Why did he, maybe he had some things to say about the moonwalk. They didn't trust him. I don't know. All I'm saying is that we were not there. Houston does have a problem. But
hey, another weird one was when Congresswoman Gabby Giffords was shot and Judge Roll from down there was shot. Her hubby was a NASA astronaut. That one kind of pricked my interest with Gabby Giffords taking the bullet, and her old man's this famous NASA astronaut guy. So that was another weird one for me.
There you go. It's after a while, Robert, you see that the cheekbone is connected to the neck bone and the neck bone. Thanks for the airtime here.
Yeah, no problem, man.
Bye now.
All right, see ya. Take care. Let's see. We got Wes, Mr. Producer, or Imagio in Maui. All right, let's take Wes in Idaho, right, Wes? Wes, you there?
No, this isn't Wes. This is Frank.
Frank? Frank?
What happened? Is this Robert?
Yes, go ahead, Wes. How you doing, sir?
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yes, sir.
We've got connected, huh? Okay. Yes. Flat Earth. 500 years ago, we could see the mast of the ship before we saw the hull. It's 8 miles on the ocean. That's all the further you can see because of the curvature. Is there an explanation for that from you flat earthers? Are you a flat earther, Robert?
I just look into it. I like watching people debate the subject. And so the whole thing with the lighthouses, being able to see them from 50 and 60 miles out. They argue these things. It's very interesting, Wes, but proceed.
Okay. I got a dozen copies of God's Covenant People yesterday, today, and forever by Ted Weiland. Are you familiar with that book? It's on the internet for free.
Yeah, you called in and told me about it last week.
Okay, I'll go to the next. Earthing. Have you ever heard of earthing? Do you know what it is? I guess it's considered maybe the most important discovery, health discovery ever.
Earthing, E-A-R-T-H-I-N-G. I've heard the word. Go ahead and elaborate for the audience.
Okay, I'll describe. There was this television cable salesman in Montana about 15 years ago that discovered or thought about everybody wearing rubber-soled shoes and how we're not in contact with the earth anymore like we were with leather shoes before. Also, living inside of houses, that also breaks us with contact to the earth. His mind was electrical, and there is, our bodies are. I've got confessions from Ben Fuchs once when I called him. I said, you're into the nutrition, the chemical. How about the electrical aspect of our lives? Have you ever looked into that? This earthing, walking barefoot on the grass, walking barefoot on the beach, there's something that happens. We've known that for years. Well, what is happening is we're coming in contact with the earth, and this guy in Montana developed a real simple band that goes around the ankle and plugs into the wall, and you can ground yourself out from right then and there. $20 expenditure. Go to sleep with the thing on his blanket. The Tour de France bicycle racers have a sleeping bag-like thing that they crawl into every night, and it's plugged into the wall so they can be grounded, because they heal fast, because they're $1 million racers, they want to go faster than the other guy. It works. What I have been doing is, it's sunshine in North Idaho, and I'm going out there in the shade and laying down on the earth with just my swimming trunks on, putting a little water down so I get a little bit better conductivity. I'm telling you, it feels better. I've got a DVD, and there's a guy friggin' crawling into a hole in the ground because it is helpful to you. I'm serious. I can see myself wanting to live in a friggin' cave or something. You know, have it surrounded by the good earth. I want to put this idea out to you. I hope it's maybe revealed in my voice, perhaps a little bit of enthusiasm. I mean, I like. Get over this thing called MS. 13 years with it, I'm still walking, but they figure after 10 years, you're usually in a wheelchair. But I'm feeling better. Anyway, over and out. That's what I wanted to say, Robert.
All right, Wes. Very interesting. So, connection to the earth and... I've been seeing some of this in other parts of my research, and so very fascinating. Let me move on to Imagio in Maui. Greetings. We got Imagio.
Are you there, Robert?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Hi. You know, I'm talking about the flat earth.
Yeah, it's a lightning rod subject with people. It really is.
Yeah, it is. you know, normally that's not my topic, but I'm 70 years old, and back when I was 18, I learned to celestial navigate. I've sailed most of my life. I've been on the ocean a third of my life.
Uh-huh.
I spent a lot of time out in the middle of the ocean.
I've spent quite a few months out there myself.
Have you? Isn't that wonderful? It's a wonderful place. And
It's humbling thinking that you could fall off of the ship and there ain't nothing for miles and miles and miles around.
I thank God I'm still here from a lot of things I've been through out there. But the point I'm trying to make is when I learned to celestial navigate, you know, I got into mathematics at the same time. I was, you know, a young man. And it was just the celestial navigation was a necessity because there was no electronics like we have today, you know, satellites and all that stuff.
That's true.
To give us our locations, yeah. So you had to know the time, and you had to be able to take star sights and sun shots and moon and so on and so forth. The point I'm making is every time we resolved our calculations as navigators and came up with what we call a line of position and determined where we were on the face of the earth by, you know, where the lines of position cross, that's where you are. Mm-hmm. So you always are taking one or two or three lines of position, maybe more. The point I'm making is all of our calculations are based on spherical geometry. And everything that is organized in what they call the nautical almanac, those are based on spherical geometry. And as a young man, I was privileged to be able to get on some fine racing yachts, you know, in my late teens and early 20s as a navigator. Because I could navigate, I was invited to participate in this or that race. And again, what I'm saying is I really tried to perfect my craft. And never did I not, when I was able to see the stars, get to where I wanted to go, no matter where in the Pacific Ocean I was going. Mm-hmm. I've only been in the Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I don't know whether the Earth is flat or not. But when I'm on a boat out in the middle of the ocean and I have no point of land as a reference, I remember seeing roundness, not just a circle around me, but roundness. You're always on the top of the sphere, no matter where you are. If you're on a boat in the middle of the ocean and the stars are shining, all the starlight is coming and pointing to you as it reflects across the surface of the ocean. That's because you're at the top of the sphere. Again, no matter where you are. And, you know, as to those proofs, so to speak, of the Earth being flat by airplanes, not having to nose down all the time. And
It's a lot out there to try to, you know, navigate through as somebody trying to research the subject. I get what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, but if you're on a sphere and you know spherical geometry and you actually do believe in gravity, you'll realize that an airplane at 30,000 feet is going to be at 30,000 feet no matter where you are on that globe. You're not going to have to nose down or anything because your frame of reference is where you are. the geometry of space around the sphere demands that that airplane, where it is over that Earth's surface, is for all practical purpose at that point over the surface of the Earth, is flying over a flat surface. It's not going up or down because it has to go down the side of, you know, the slope of the sphere. And by the way, for anybody who's wondering, if you stand, everybody's wondered what it is, you know, how far the horizon is away from you, and that always depends on how high you are up above the surface of the ocean or wherever you are. But if you have a perfectly mathematical sphere the size of the Earth, and if you look in up on the internet, like Wikipedia, it'll tell you that the radius of the Earth is 3,959 miles. And you can calculate by drawing a circle on a piece of paper in a horizontal line tangent to the circle at the top, and a perpendicular line from the center of the circle tangent to the circumference and that horizontal line. If that's the radius of a sphere at 3,959 miles, and you draw another line up and make it 1 mile from the point on the surface of the sphere, you can calculate using the Pythagorean theorem the distance that it drops from that line tangent to the point on the sphere.
Yeah, well, here's my problem. Here's my problem with those kind of dimensions, because flat earthers have used them, and they say there's no way I should be able to see this object this many miles away at the measurements that I've been given by the scientific community. And so that's the problem I have with people telling me the Earth is this many, you know, miles in the diameter and so forth, because the flat Earth apologists have used those very calculations and said, well, why am I seeing this object way farther away when the curvature should have dipped this object way below the horizon line. You see, so these arguments of how big the Earth is by ball Earth apologists don't compensate enough for people that are using their own numbers that they're giving out and saying, well, why am I still seeing this object not way below the horizon line this many miles away? And so, you know, it's a complicated. I got a couple other callers I got to get to. I gave you a lot of time, but go ahead and finish
up. Great, I appreciate it. I love your show, and you keep it up.
Well, I appreciate you, man. I appreciate you listening. But I like to look at every angle, and you know, this is if you listen to the show.
Absolutely, and I'm with you on that.
Yeah, yeah. And so, all right, buddy. See you, man. I appreciate you being out there. All right, see ya. Let's take Sean in Austin. Come on up, Sean.
Hi, can you hear me there, Rob?
Oh, Austin. Oh, this is Australia. Sean in Australia. Go ahead, buddy.
Yeah. The whole flat Earth thing's, it seems like it's popping tonight, mate.
Well, it's popping in the entire alternative media, as you know, and so people are, you know, I've looked into it, and let's just say I have feelings that some people make good points over here, other people make good points over here, and I try to, you know, I don't spend a lot of time with it because it'll eat you up, but it's interesting to listen to people on both sides of it kind of hash it out. Go ahead, Sean.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think Dave from Southern Carolina that called in a few calls ago.
Southern California.
He hit the nail on the head. Right, yeah, I think he hit the nail on the head when he said that, you know, we take a look at the possible moon landing or the possible not moon landing, and we take a look at flat Earth, and at very least it gives us an idea that I guess the scientists, well, they're not really scientists, they're fat cats and bureaucrats that bear false certificates that offer up what we see on the television and what we hear on the mainstream radio just can't be trusted. We wouldn't be questioning whether the Earth is flat or round if we could trust them now, would we?
That's a valid point because it's, look, these jerks that have been behind the levers of influence with media, academia, and so forth, they basically mind screwed the population to the point where we have to question every little gibberish that comes out of their mouth. That's how bad it is. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. That's how bad it is. And it makes for a very, very slow learning process, which throws us off track. Now, this is how I sort of look at the flat Earth thing. I myself am not what they call a flat earther. I'm a person who, as your previous caller was alluding to, works things out celestially, if you will. For instance, I used to track the Iridium flare series of satellites all around the world, and I knew when they were going to be coming around because I worked them out, for the lack of a better way of explaining it, to, I guess you could say, the layman's when it comes to astrology, I worked them out in a celestial value. I knew that they were going to be coming around the globe at a certain time, and I would know exactly where they're going to be on my telescope because I worked them out that way. Not just that, we have planes that once upon a time, you know, the captains had to actually work out how to land a plane with the globe turning. So either we have a flat Earth that moves sideways or we have a globe that is turning as they say it is. And once upon a time, before the computers were introduced to the planes, where they would automatically account for the turning of the Earth when they're going to be landing. For instance, if you're flying from Australia to America, the plane has to account for how much the world has turned so that it lands, starts landing at the right time, and the captain then takes over from there. Once upon a time, they had to calculate that manually. We have to look at all of that. But really, does it matter? The way I look at it, again, as Dave said, you know, it teaches us that these people cannot be trusted. These fat cats and bureaucrats outside of proper science cannot be trusted, and we do have to question everything. But in the main scheme of things, Rob, I think we have to look at this. It is a distraction if we spend too much time on it. With what's going on in the world today when it comes to the bombing of Syria and what the Jewish lobbies and Israel as a whole are doing to Palestine, they're telling us to look to the left while they slap us in the head to the right. We have to be careful that we don't spend too much time on these things, because whether the Earth is flat or round, the world is still suffering with everything that we're seeing going on today, Rob.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I understand that. And here's the thing: we're those of us out here that do what we do. We're multifaceted individuals, and I can, you know, I can chew bubblegum and walk at the same time. And I do my due diligence and try to, you know, look. My big thing is this: the collapse of my country, the collapse of your country. I'm sure you're worried about first and foremost the open sieve called immigration, the cultural change. I mean, basic safety is done now to where they've wound up here in the United States with Black Lives Matter, with Trayvon Martin, with Mike Brown, with Eric Garner, with Philando Castile. The sequence of cascading events where the media has chosen to latch on to these police shootings, it's accelerated this destabilization between races in this heterogeneous society I live in, to the point now where women, like restaurant owners, did you see this thing where the big fat black guy and his little girlfriend, they beat the crap out of a daughter and mother that owned a restaurant over a bill? People are getting shanked just walking out of a karaoke bars by people. My country, especially if you live in an urban area, this is first and foremost for me. Now, I take a call about the shape of the Earth, whether the Earth's moving and so forth, and I elaborate that, yeah, I've looked into it. Now, is that first and foremost in me and my life? No. But at the same time, a guy like me that has a lot of fingers in the dike, I can kind of navigate this. And, you know, I know where my pecking order, my hierarchy of importance is. And you've got yours, and the listeners out here in La La Land, they've got theirs. And, you know, hey, look, like I said, people should buy Edward Hendry's book. It's probably free out there online somewhere. And this is a very serious guy that's written some of the best books on a lot of different subjects. And, I stumbled upon his book through Tex Mars. And Tex Mars, I don't think is a flat earther. But like I said, he's got enough respect for Hendry to carry his book. And, you know, and I had enough interest to buy the book and read it. And look, there's points made in some of the books, actually, that I can't explain on air because I don't have the book in front of me. It's in another location. But let's just say this. With things going on, people do need a paradigm shift to let them know that nihilism is not the way to go, that we are special, the earth is special. This is an existence that for us to sit here and, you know, we've been brainwashed into thinking that we're just animals and that we're here and this is all just evolution and there's no bigger answer. And so it is a component into basically more of a supernatural worldview that I hold. And I know you probably don't. We've kind of discussed that off air a bit, but I think a supernatural worldview would do the earth much better. And I'm not talking about Islamic jihadist supernatural worldview where God says it's okay to kill the next guy because he doesn't believe like you. And we're going to have to get into this maybe sometime on air where you mentioned this, where people that believe in a creator and atheist can still, you know, come to agreements about things because right now with the way people relate to each other and interact with each other, we're going down towards the lowest common denominator, almost at a bestial animal level. And it just sucks to see this with all the technological progress, our interpersonal progress, all of us together. It's sad that you know, you walk outside of your house and you got to worry about being shanked or stabbed or, you know, shot in 2017 when people have these devices in their hands that people 30 years ago would think you're somebody from, you know, 2055 if they saw that thing. And then now, but the street existence is still this horrible. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. And I think it would be a great subject to discuss where, as you said, you know, atheists can get along with Christians and everything like that. You know, we had people all around the globe, especially when it comes to different networks, talking about how, you know, we shouldn't be able to get along. And I'm thinking, why? I mean, most of my friends are Christian. For instance, James Lantier, the gentleman that wrote Downtown White Police, I'm going to be having him on again very soon, and we're going to be talking about the same thing. It would just be an interesting subject. It's something that needs to be discussed because we're being separated left, right, and center. And I hope you didn't misconstrue what I was saying about the flat Earth thing. I think that it's well within your right on your broadcast to discuss this once in a while.
Yeah.
I mean, I've rarely heard you speak about it, and we've heard some people come in and talk about it this evening, which is fantastic. I think that it needs to be discussed, but it just doesn't need to be overly discussed. I was more talking to your audience that may not know how to handle the discussion, because a lot of people think that even if it's discussed on a light level, that it's a bad thing. I look at it this way: touch upon absolutely everything at least once, and then if it's not necessarily relevant to what's going on in everyday life, then sort of leave it behind and then tackle it later. Again, flat Earth, round Earth, it doesn't matter what it is, the crap is still hitting the fan here on Earth. So that's yeah. something that we
well, you know, I was listening to. I was listening to, and we're going to bring Frank up in a second, Mr. Producer. He's our last caller, and we'll just all have a kind of a three-way conversation. But I was listening to Dr. Slattery, who works with Dr. Duke, but he interviewed Benjamin Fulford, this very interesting character. I'm sure you've seen him online. He interviewed him last night on RBN, and this was Dr. Slattery's last show. He was filling in for Farron Schoaf on RBN. And anyway, Fulford made a point which I thought was really good. And Fulford's an interesting dude. He talks about the Chinese Tongs, the Yakuza, the Japanese royal family, and everybody's going to turn on the Illuminati and all this garbage. You know, it's interesting to listen to. But anyway, he was talking about this. He's like, look, I want to save the world, but at the same time, I got to make sure my dogs are fed. You know, he's like, look, you got to take care of things in your own sphere, in your own, you know, sphere of influence. You know, you got a cat, you got a dog, you got a person that's in your life. Hey, I got to make sure my loved ones are taken care of before I worry about going out and saving the world. And I thought that was a really good point that he brought up. It's like, yeah, you got to make sure you feed the dog before you go out and, you know, save the damn world. And so I thought that was a great, you know, thing that he said during the program. I was listening to it on the way home last night.
Oh, absolutely. That's a fantastic analogy. It's a similar analogy to what I use when I'm talking about people of the third world. A lot of people say, let's go and save the third world peoples, you know, especially the politically correct and what we know as the social justice warriors. Let's go and save the third world. And I say, hold on a second, how about saving our own people first? How can we even dare to think that we're going to save poor backward peoples in their own countries if we can't even save ourselves?
Right, yeah, well, that's the thing. And then half these people want to wreck their homeland while they want to go out and traipse around and play savior to everybody but their own. This self-suicide programming that they've been fed, these people in, like traditional West white European people, they've got this suicidal thing that's been impregnated into them. And now look, Germany, Sweden, France, Britain, they're all about to, as Congressman Hank Johnson said, capsize themselves and their own lands while they're worried about saving some, you know, far off idea of social justice. And it's like, man, you're ready to slit your own people's throat just to prove that you're ready to go for social justice. It's like you people are sick. And look, there's a lot of compromised people out here that are pointing the hypocrisies out, which is great. I think, even people that that's why I play videos by like guys like Mark Dice. Now, you know, I don't think Mark Dice is some great leader of some sort of movement, but the dude has the ability to point out these hypocrisies that in a kind of a funny way that's effective. And, you know, these young college kids, you know, they might not listen to a guy like you or me, but a guy like Dice, where he really points out the anti-white nature of the sick people on the left, I think it's an effective, you know, let's just say strategic tool to use, where other people will be like, no, I don't want to have nothing to do with playing a Dice video on my show. I'm too good. I got my nose in the air. And I'm more of a practical, tactical, strategic type person, where it's like I don't have that snooty type of posture that I take, to where, you know, it's like, look, I know a lot of people are out here that are goofballs and then they got agendas, but things are so crazy right now that I think using any of these kind of mechanisms to point out where we're at, I just do it, and I don't care what the fallout is. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, we have a gentleman that talks over on the network there by the name of William John Beattie. He was actually the founder of the Canadian Nazi Party. And he speaks about accenting the positive. In fact, one of the old songs that he has for one of his bumpers is Accent the Positive. And what he means by that, Rob, just to sort of bolster what you're saying here, is that he takes little pieces from here and little pieces from there. And you might have somebody that discusses certain points of a certain subject in a nefarious way, but on the same token, there's little nuggets of truth. So what John's trying to say is, okay, what we need to do is just sort of bring in these little points of truth from what these people are saying and leave the negative behind.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Mr. Producer, bring Frank in, if you would, if he's still on the line. This is Frank from North Carolina. He's the one that set up the Alex Jones, David Duke interview. Robert. Go ahead, Frank. Somebody was telling me that you had a heart attack, man. You good? You in good health?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, reports of my demise are greatly over-exaggerated. Yeah, actually, that kind of ruined my night last week. I got a call from somebody, left me a voicemail, and said, did you know that you were dead? You're being reported as dead on RBN. And I was like, there was some other weird stuff going on right at that moment. I was like, this is interesting. Anyway, it's just coincidental. Stuff like that happens. But no, it was someone else. Some other prank, and for some reason, because I had called into that show in the past, I think the way it was I think the host had assumed that it was me or something. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't listening, though.
All right, well, we're glad you're still around. We're glad you're still around, Chief. Go ahead.
Yeah, I tell you, that was a very shocking call from Wes. But I think we're all going to be in the ground pretty soon, so. Unless you're not away with it some other way.
Well, I'm glad Wes is getting back to nature. Hey, that's cool.
Yeah, this professor, though, this Jewish professor,
Evergreen. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, and this whole anti-white thing. I personally believe that this professor probably would have been just fine if it had been anti-white, excluding the Jew. But when he found he got caught up in it, that's when he had the problem. I'm sure he's probably one of these Jewish professors out there that is at the forefront of all this anti-white hysteria. And he got caught up in it. I mean, it was real obvious to me.
Yeah, well, it would be interesting to know his previous kind of machinations before this all kind of came to the surface, how he was, that's the thing. We don't know when an event like this bubbles up to the surface with Evergreen, and then he becomes this guy, the kind of face on it. And then Joe Rogan interviews him, and then Jones was talking about him, and he's been on Tucker Carlson, and It's like the kosher kind of white defender, like a Michael Savage on a smaller level. Savage has been really pro-white in the last couple months. If you listen to blurbs of his program, and he's really becoming a kind of a white defender. And when you read the protocols, you got to keep that angle in mind, where it talks about like, We'll have agents on all parts of this spectrum, from the far fringes all the way through the middle. And so, you know, the protocols kind of taint your thinking to where you're like, oh, is Savage just playing the pro-white role to keep white people on the kind of pro-Israel, plantation? And so, Pam Geller, these type of people, you look at them, you're like, well, are they really trying to defend whites, or are they just trying to keep whites on the plantation to where they think conservative Jews are on their side or not? And that's a real tough one. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's like the Steinlight plan, I think, is what it's called. I've not looked into it that much, but I'm aware of it, but that makes perfect sense. That fits the evolutionary survival strategy of the Jew, and it's all about synthesis. They control the left and the right. They control the pro-war movement, and they control the anti-war movement, and they control every thing in between. But, speaking of Dr. Slattery, and by the way, I did force myself to listen to that dinner time conversation and over listening over my phone, that was very difficult to do. But yeah, I fell down that rabbit hole. I mean, I was impressed by the fact that he confronted the Rockefeller guy.
Yeah,
the expression on Rockefeller's face was priceless and all that. But you know, I mean, I just think it's a bunch of crap. There's no white dragon society that's going to save anybody. I mean, you know, it's like Planet X. There's always something out there that's going to save us. And nobody wants to do the work. Nobody wants to speak up. They want some, you know, some fantastic event or something to save us. But, you know, one thing about Dr. Slattery that he taught me, and this is anecdotal, but still it's very powerful to me. He, you know, is a former Ivy League professor, and he had a lot of Jewish colleagues, obviously. And he, you know, one day he got curious, and he there was a trust between he and his colleagues, and he felt like he could go and privately ask them a question, a personal question, and he went and asked them all individually, you know, the Jewish professors, you know, do you see yourself as being white? And he said, without exception, to a man, they all said, no, I do not, as a Jewish person, I do not see myself as being white. They don't see themselves as being white.
Right,
they
right.
see themselves as being above white.
Yeah. Well, you know, here's the thing, Mr. Producer, get clip 13 ready. This is this Mark Ruffalo individual. Let's play this real quick, Mr. Producer, clip 13. It's a Mark Dice, but this, oh, never mind. Don't worry about it. Yeah. Just tell me if you get it up. But anyway, this guy's talking about how MSNBC and NBC should not hire any more white people. And this guy's like, I guess he's Italian, but it's just like, you know, he's a darker Italian, maybe Sicilian. And some of the Sicilians don't consider themselves white, I guess. But there's always been this fight between Italians and Sicilians that, you know, it's anyway. But anyway, it's just, you got it? All right, go ahead and play it. Go ahead and play it.
Actor Mark Ruffalo, who plays the Incredible Hulk in Marvel's Avenger movies, is upset that MSNBC is hiring white people. He tweeted out this link to a petition urging people to sign it and tell MSNBC and NBC News to stop the white conservative hiring spree. After President Obama won in 2008, Fox News did not hire dozens of progressive female, black, and brown young TV personalities in order to speak to the Obama coalition. So why on earth is MSNBC pushing out black and brown voices and filling its network with hardline extreme conservatives? We need to let the NBC executives know that there will be a sharp backlash if MSNBC becomes another platform for right-wing hate. Tell MSNBC executives, stop the white conservative hiring spree at MSNBC. Just imagine the hilarious backlash if some liberal lunatic started a petition to denounce Fox News for hiring black people or Latinos. And then just imagine the backlash if some C-list Hollywood actor were to tweet a link to the petition and encourage their millions of moronic fans to sign it. As this meme cleverly illustrates, white people are the only race you can legally discriminate against. A meme that I posted on my Instagram account, which they then deleted for terms of service violations. And then I posted the meme and that screenshot on Facebook. Facebook then also deleted the post for violating their terms of service, further illustrating the accuracy of the meme. Unfortunately, that meme just keeps coming to life, as was illustrated last month when a bunch of crazy college kids at Evergreen State College in Washington State decided to try to evict all white students from campus for a day without whites. When one college professor who happened to be a liberal refused to just call in sick for the day without whites, the students decided to bully him and came protesting outside of his office, yelling and screaming at him, calling him a racist. Not only did they storm his office and start yelling and screaming at him, but they also want him to be fired. He's the racist one, they say. Yes, we must be living in the Twilight Zone. That's the only place that such insanity could possibly be happening. As you may have heard earlier this week, that poor college kid who was imprisoned and tortured in North Korea for the heinous crime of stealing a poster, which he wanted as a souvenir to bring back, died earlier this week. And here is an article from the Huffington Post, the Huffington Post. North Korea proves your white male privilege is not universal. Yes, liberal lunatics literally took joy in this poor college kid being imprisoned and tortured and ultimately put into a coma and killed in North Korea because he's a white male. Film director Tim Burton came under fire last year because there just aren't enough white people in his films. They just...
This is, I mean, this is the insane level where we're reaching. And like I said earlier in the broadcast, this is psychological warfare, and these professors are all in on it. And I think that
Mark Geis is in on it too, though.
Yeah, yeah. I'm saying he points out some good points. That's why I use his videos from time to time, because the thing is, when you see this, though, I think there's another element under the surface, and that's the coercive kind of electronic, almost scientific, and I don't want to say MK Ultra, but I'm even saying way layers above that, to where I think they're controlling people psychotronically now, especially in certain geographical locations. And I got a clip on these cell phone towers that I wanted to play where they're basically making people sick. And I think that they can actually manipulate behavior is what I'm, you know, I keep seeing this coming up in the surface, to where basically it seems like the ability now of the scientific kind of technocratic side of the house can actually, through ELF, wave system, psychotronic systems, cause people to be violent, cause mental illness damn near, it seems like. It just seems like there's something going on under the surface on top of the usual, like, Skinner, Pavlov-type level of stuff. I think there's elements under the surface which are even more insidious that are causing things to happen, you know, like weapon system type things. I just have that feeling, and I know numerous others out here that are researching this. This is where I'm getting it from, and so it's freaky. Go ahead.
I just want to make one quick point, though. When I say that about Mark Geis, I'm not just talking about on the larger picture. I'm talking about on the Jewish thing. I randomly tune into Alex Jones from time to time. He's always lumping guys named Goldstein in as white guys, and Geis does the same thing, and that's just not true. The privilege in America is, I got David Knight to admit on the Alex Jones show about a year ago, I said the problem in America is not white privilege, it's Jewish privilege. And David Knight said, you're exactly right, Frank. And
here's the thing, though, Frank, but the thing is, the people that are going to slit your throat, 90% of them, 95% of them aren't wise enough to differentiate between a white person and a Jewish privilege. So these people out here that are cranking up the anti-white thing on the Jewish side of the house, I think that they've got some sort of a suicidal gene about them, because what they're really doing is, by cranking up the anti-white fervor, they're not, I don't know if they really realize that they're not protected. They're going to be swept up in it, because these Black Hebrew Israelites on the East Coast, the Nation of Islam types, the Hotep, like House of Consciousness types, they view them as even like just as or more insidious as regular old whitey. And that's what I don't know if they realize, or they're willing to take that gamble. This is the kind of weird thing.
Well,
about
I think they're pathological. I think it's based in hate. I think Jews hate white people. They hate white people, and they're willing to take that risk. I mean, it's pathological. I mean, you can call it suicidal, pathological. I personally believe that my 51 years of experience, I didn't even know about Jews until I was 40. I didn't know there was such a thing as Jewish power. I believe that the Jewish people, as a group, hate white people. I really do.
Well, I think a good portion. I'm not saying – I think that there's plenty of Jewish people – let's say that might not, but I think they're the ones that are organized and clicked up in the Conference of Presidents type organizations, the American Jewish Committee, the B'nai B'rith, and some of these other characters. I think a large swath of them that in the communist left, the Schumer world and Feinstein world, I think a large portion of them are, you're exactly right. But like I was covering earlier, now they're being jettisoned from like gay pride parades. And so it's like this left eating itself. And so now they've sown all this discord out here into the universe. And some of these chickens are coming home to roost. It's very interesting to watch some of this. Like, did you hear the comment I was making about pink washing? Did you hear that earlier in the show?
No, I woke up.
Yeah, well, listen to this. There was a dyke march in Chicago, okay? And these Jewish lesbians wanted to have their rainbow flags with their six-pointed stars, right? And they wanted to be part of the dyke march, and they kicked them out. They're like, you can't be here. Because, see, they called what they were trying to do was pink washing. So, see, this the gay community, the larger gay community said, what you're trying to do here is, because the Jewish community is so nice to the gay community, you're trying to pink wash your war crimes against the Palestinians. And so there's this whole kind of eating itself movement going on out here in the far left community, where they're like, now they are disavowing Jews. The BDS is largely a left wing movement, and now the gay community, and you know, they're pushing out these Jewish lesbians and Jewish gays, saying, no, we don't want any part of you guys, because you guys are you know, doing war crimes on the Palestinians, and you're oppressive people and the rest of it. And so this is an interesting trend to watch. And your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I have to admit, I'm unaware of this new phenomenon.
It is.
As a practical man, I think we need to do whatever we can to stir it up and get them fighting each other. Because, see, the way I look at it is, I'm one of those guys that goes down swinging. I mean, I'm going to give you the bird as I take my last breath, but I think America's gone. America's a corpse. We're not ever coming back. The white race is not coming back. The white race has already been destroyed. I think what the white race has, Stockholm syndrome. I think that's about as close as you can get to it. It's this, it's just like pathological altruism where, you know, if somebody says, hey, this guy over here needs help, and it's a white guy, oh, well, you know, we'll just let the next person that comes along help them. Oh, wait a minute, we have a black family over here. Anybody want to help? The white people are all jumping over themselves to prove, look, I'm a noble white person. I want to, you know, do for, you know, someone of another race. And I'm like, man, it's just silly. It's just freaking silliness. I mean, yeah. We're talking about survival. I mean, and it's not based in hate. It's not because I hate black people. There's some black people that I like or whatnot, but, you know, or I can get along with. And, of course, there's a lot of white people that I can't get along with. But it's based out of love. I mean, it's like, would I be hateful if I said there's a particular kind of whale that I would hate to see go away because I just thought there's something about that whale I love, or there's a certain type of bird, and when I'm walking through the woods, I always, you know, it's kind of nostalgic. I love that sound of that bird. I mean, if it was any other thing that a white man wanted to preserve or had a good feeling about or a preference for, it would be okay. But if it's for his own race, it's deemed as hate. And white people buy into that. It's just a bunch of nonsense.
This is true. And, and let me just say, though, Frank, don't give up hope, because, you know, the universe, man, is big. And just because when things seem their darkest, there's a pendulum out here that swings. And believe me, I try to keep my ear to the ground, and I try to keep my eyes on a lot of things. And I want to get Sean's take on this, but there is a pendulum, and it's starting to swing back to where, let's just say, there is hope. Now, while this pendulum is swinging back, there are forces that see the pendulum swinging back. And so what they're trying to do now is to disrupt and destabilize things around that pendulum that's swinging back. to make them so chaotic that to hinder the pendulum swing back to rationality, sanity, and just normal, you know, human affection for your own tribe, et cetera, et cetera. And Sean, so do you see that as well? There is the pendulum swing back, but at the same time, the forces see it, and so therefore they're trying to stop it with all their might.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just discussing this recently to the audience over our side of the fence, if you will, and I wholeheartedly agree. I do see where you're coming from, Frank, because there's no doubt about it. These people up the top, if you will, are working against us, and what's worse is it's the next door neighbour and the guy down the street that are working against us even more because they've been convinced to believe that what we're being told is true when it comes from our mainstream media and everything like that. But one thing I do know for sure is that, as John Beattie would say, we have the Ludus on our side. Now, the Ludus are the legal underground defence units. And these are people that are right up there at the top of the pyramid, on the other side of it, if you will. People that I've met firsthand, I'm not necessarily saying that they're 100% to the level of the Rothschilds when it comes to being up there on the ladder, but I will say they're right up there when it comes to fighting for what is good and what is right. These were Christian men. These were political Nazis, if you will, and I know that many people want to frown upon the word Nazi, but not all of them are the type of Nazi that go around breaking fingers. Some of them are sitting down and using not just intelligent thought, but brilliant thought to fight for what is right, and as you put it, Rob, are trying to hold that pendulum back so that it doesn't end up crushing everybody, for the lack of a better way of saying it. We definitely do have people on our side, and whilst sometimes it can feel like we're absolutely doomed, and look, we might even feel like we're going further and further and down the ladder for the next 20 or 30 years. Heck, we mightn't even be alive. We've got to pass this down to our kids, but I'm with you on this, Frank. I'm the sort of person that you are. No matter what, they can beat me down until I'm black and blue in the face, but I'm going to flip them the bird and hope to goodness that these Ludus, these legal underground defence units that are working tirelessly behind the scenes, that are working from shadow, if you will actually come forth and help us out when the time is right, if indeed the proverbial crap hits the proverbial fan in our lifetime.
Well, here's the thing. It really depends on where you are. Look, start studying counties. Start studying municipalities. Start studying states. Don't be grounded to one place, because let me just say this. Where I live, you can travel 10 miles from one county to another, and it's night and day politically. Court systems, police systems. We have to be aware as people, and you know, people that live in these places like gun-free zones, like Chicago or DC or New York. There's no way I'm going to move to a city like that. And there, you know, I've got this art of YouTube clip that I couldn't play about Illinois becoming anarchia. Basically, it's on the it's on the verge of belly up, junk bonds. It probably might be one of the first states to go completely belly up. It's right next door to me. The state I live in, it's political. Its economic situation is a completely different story. It's run by completely different type of people. You see, the United States is big. And I don't know about Australia with Sean on the line, but I'm saying this for Americans. It's like, look, start looking at where you live, what kind of political entities are involved. Now, there's corruption everywhere, but the thing is, there's levels of corruption. You might want to move to a place where when this SHTF moment happens, that you're going to be a lot more comfortable with who's around you. That's what I want to say. We've gone 4 hours This is Ken's last night behind the board. Everybody thank Ken. I want to thank him, man. He's been doing a lot of work for me for a couple of years now. Ken and I are going to stay in touch, and we might have some things going together. It's my life's so crazy and chaotic.